Welcome to The Playlist Podcast, a weekly discussion of films and TV. I'm your host, Charles Barfield, managing editor of The Playlist. And for this episode, I'm joined by my regular co-hosts, Mike D'Angelo and Brian Farver. I hope you boys brought your shovels because we're going Disney Plus dumpster diving.
Oh, cool.
You're making it sound like we're looking for garbage.
Well, so, okay. Let's break it down for real quick here. We're talking Disney Plus on this episode because it's the second anniversary of the streaming platform. But instead of talking about those movies you see advertised with the huge banners when you open the app, we're digging deeper into the depths of Disney Plus to find those sneaky little films that are in Mickey Mouse's library, but people might not realize are there. So,
A Candle Shoe with Jodie Foster.
What? Candle Shoe? What the fuck is that?
I watched that in the fifth grade. It's really troubling. It's a troubling movie.
I would like not about her things that you watched in the fifth grade. I want a whole list.
Hacksaw would be on there as well. Also on Disney Plus. Oh, Hacksaw the Horse.
Oh boy.
And all the Boogities.
Yeah. Oh no. Boogity went back to when I was a wee child. Yeah. I grew up with Boogity. Is this what the podcast is going to be instead?
No. Well, I mean, it'll eventually get there. Let's just try to stay on track at least 3 minutes into this.
Fine.
Okay. But before we dig up the skeletons buried in Mickey Mouse's backyard, I got to tell you, the Playlist Podcast is part of the Playlist Podcast Network, which includes Be Real, The Fourth Wall, Deep Focus, The Discourse, and more. And if you want to find us, you can check your podcast app of choice, whether that's Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, Anchor, Stitcher, anywhere else you find your favorite shows. But before we get to our topic at hand, I'd like to put Mike on the spot and have him tell folks about the newest podcast on the Playlist Podcast Network. Mike?
Yeah. Yes. Me and our editor-in-chief, Rodrigo Perez, started Yellowstoners, where we talk about the one of the best shows on TV, Yellowstone. And surprisingly, we are not stoned while we do it. But since that was the kind of the idea behind the show, we might actually do that towards the finale. So,
yes. So there you go. For all those people demanding Yellowstone content, and I think it was Rodrigo who willed this into existence.
Wonderful. But
if there are other people out there, and there are apparently, like, what?
8 million.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. Dude, good on you. Taylor Sheridan and Kevin Costner.
It's a great show.
The Paramount Network. Apparently 8 million people have access to the Paramount Network. Go figure.
Yeah, cable's a wonder.
Yeah. And if people don't catch it on Paramount Network, it's a Peacock thing, right?
You can watch the older seasons on Peacock, yeah.
Oh, you can't catch up on, or you can't watch season 4 on Peacock?
Not day and date or the next day, I don't think.
Oh, geez, what a mess.
It's all over the place, man.
Screw Yellowstone.
Hey, now, come on.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to be a guest on Yellowstoners.
Yes, you will. Especially if we're both stoned and need
that's
a, like,
true.
A
I might have to steer the ship a little, but we'll get there. Okay. So with all that out of the way, listen to Yellowstoners. New episodes every week. Episode 1's already out.
Wow, you're really selling it.
No. I'm sure it's great. I'm sure it's great. but anyway, back to the topic at hand. Let's talk Disney. More specifically, we're going to talk about Disney Plus because, as I said, today marks the second anniversary of the streaming service, which in a short time has become one of the biggest streaming services in the world. Seemingly,
shocking.
I know, catching up pretty quickly to the big dog Netflix. I mean, they're still like tens of millions behind Netflix, but hey, in 2 years, that's not bad.
Not bad at all.
And in celebration of its own birthday, Disney Plus is celebrating Disney Plus Day. Not the most interesting or clever name for it, but whatever.
I give it a D+.
Oh, good.
See what I did right there.
I like it. So, in honor of Disney Plus Day, we're going to be completely ignoring Marvel Studios, Pixar, Disney Animation, and Lucasfilm, and we're going to talk about some of the buried treasures that can be found in the bowels of Disney Plus. Films that we enjoy and recommend for listeners, but films that take more than a couple of clicks in the app to locate. But before we talk about our picks, I think it's worthwhile to take a second to talk about Disney Plus as a platform. I think we've all been Disney Plusing, as the kids say, since day one, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Genuinely.
Yeah. So are you guys happy with the service 2 years later, Mike?
Still love it. It is worth every penny. We use it all the time.
Brian?
Especially with kids.
Yeah. I don't think I am as excited about it as I was, you know, when it first launched. But there's still plenty of stuff on there. And yeah, like you said, I mean, you will find some hidden gems. I mean, just last night, my son and I were watching some of the old Goofy shorts from the early 1940s. So there's
were still, they racist?
There is tobacco usage. Yes. And there was a Chip and yeah, you know what? There was a Chip and Dale when we watched that did have a very racist moment.
Did they have that warning in front of it?
I can't remember actually, but I remember it took me by surprise. It was so, so jarring. let's just say it involves a pancake and Donald Duck and
oh geez, I don't even know what you're talking about. That sounds
it ends badly. We'll put it that way. Ends badly. Anyways, so yes, I it is still worthwhile. There's no way I'd get rid of it.
Well, that's my next question. Since you know, we have streaming services all over the place, all looking for our monthly money, how would you guys rank Disney Plus? But more in terms of like the must-have status, do you consider Disney Plus a must-have or a nice-to-have but not necessary sort of thing?
It's a must for me.
Yeah, I agree. Must. Yeah, it's there really is too much, and for every age group. So as the kids get older, there is still more. More. I mean,
are you going to tell me that you're not going to like sit there and watch the Marvel shows as they come out, or you're just going to like, I'll catch up later, that kind of thing? Are you going to be that guy?
Who are you talking to me?
Yeah.
Oh no, I'm watching them. You know, I made it through What If. If I'm going to watch what 9 episodes of What If, I'm going to soldier through.
Let me ask you this. If Yellowstone was on it, would you watch it?
No. No. No.
There would be a bold move
from Disney Plus.
Yeah, for sure.
But Brian is also right. There are some turds.
Yeah, for sure.
We're not going to be talking about the turds, but there are plenty. A lot of those what would they be, like mid 90s to early 2000s Disney Channel movies?
Disney Channel movies. Oof. And then like movies that Disney just acquired. Like there was a recent movie called Rocket Man. That was on there, that not the one from 1987. Who was in that? Who was in Rocket Man?
I don't know.
Why I
don't
Harlan I Williams? Think of his name. Harlan Williams. Yeah.
Yes.
No, this was a documentary, and it was just it sucked.
You're not talking the one with Kingsman guy in it. Taron Egerton.
No, that is Egerton? A different movie.
No, not the Elton John bio. This is about a dude who tries to recreate Evel Knievel's jump over the Snake River.
Does he
canyon.
Die?
No, but it's just like it's basically just him begging people for money to fund this jump. And it's just unwatchable. And Slash is in it.
But you watched it. So it's not unwatchable.
Yes, I did watch it. But if I wasn't doing something else while I was watching it, then.
Wait. Were you vacuuming or ironing or what else do you say you do sometimes when you watch
movies? I was on my stationary bike in the basement. Oh, okay. And
yeah. Masturbating. Yeah.
He wasn't pedaling, he was just furiously masturbating watching Rocket.
That's my term for biking, yes.
Okay, let's get to the topic at hand for
and
real.
We're still on the rails. We're still
so we chose three movies, and these are movies we all tend to like for once. Yeah. Unlike our Halloween episodes where we were furiously debating each other. I think we all picked movies that are generally good. So with that out of the way, let's start with Mike, because I think Mike's pick is something that surprised me when I found out it was on Disney Plus. But I think it's something that playlist readers and listeners are particularly going to enjoy. So Mike, what did you choose? What did you discover?
Of course. I mean, there was no other choice for me. The 2015 movie, Fantastic Four.
Fantastic.
No, but it does have Fantastic in the title. It's Wes Anderson's Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Yes.
So if you are like me and you're looking for something your pretentious children can, you know, those pretentious little bastards with
the Royal Tenenbaum children.
Yeah. then look no further than Wes Anderson's Fantastic Mr. Fox, based on the wonderful Roald Dahl classic.
I'm imagining like 5-year-old kids pointing with out like suspenders the symmetry and the shots.
Yeah.
And talking about, you know, his themes and act structure and all that.
Yeah, absolutely. But this one, it really is seriously, it's one of my favorite movies of his. And it's definitely one of his most universal. So it's one of those that, I mean, it's a Wes Anderson movie. So every like shot of it is intensely curated and labored over. And of course, in true Wes Anderson fashion, the cast is stacked to the gills with George Clooney, Meryl Streep, Bill Murray, Jason Schwartzman, Owen Wilson, Willem Dafoe, Adrian Brody, the list goes on. The score is great. Alexander Desplat, if that's how you say his name, he's
I'm
delightful.
Sure it's not. That's neither here nor there. A very, very fine composer.
Yes, he is. And that's the way I've always said it in my head. But another Wes Anderson like fixture, a lot of mildly obscure earworms to go with the score, and that the whole family can boogie to. So I'm all about it. And it's like a kid's movie, but it's also something that's very like well written, and obviously it's based off the Roald Dahl book, but you know, it still holds up as far as everything that's in there. It's about, you know, the importance of family, trust, persevering together, all that jazz. But there's also like, there's an element of environmentalism. There's discussions on ego and socioeconomic status. So, I mean, that's
what I love
in
like kids movies.
Yeah.
I look for class
it's
warfare.
It's digestible though.
Yeah. Okay.
And it works. So, I mean, and it's like one of Anderson's funniest films, like the most laughs per minute for sure for his movies. And yeah, I love it. I love it. But if you don't know what it's about and you just kind of want to know, it's about like this flailing, self-involved former bird thief turned writer, Mr. Fox, played by George Clooney. And he basically plunges his animal neighborhood into a war with the human farmers, Bogus, Bunce, and Bean. Yes. Because they can't, you know, stay away from stealing their stuff. And, you know, he can't resist his former life of crime. And, you know, it kind of involves or evolves into, you know, this building of a community and a clashing of his ego. So it's good. I love it.
Yeah. And so we got to mention that this isn't a Disney movie. This is actually a Fox movie.
A fantastic Mr. Fox movie.
Yeah. But considering Disney bought Fox and decided to handpick some Fox selections like put on the Disney Plus, that's how it ended up there, which I think is why it's surprising, because it doesn't really sit next to Mr. Boogity all that well. But it's there nonetheless. So and from Mr. Boogity, I go to Brian. What are your thoughts on Mr. Fox?
This is, in my opinion, his Wes Anderson's last truly great movie. And I have enjoyed you know, elements of the films he's made after, but like especially compared to his only other stop motion film,
Isle of Dogs, which is also on the streamer.
This one is so far above that.
It is. I will agree there.
Man, this is as good as it gets. And like, I look at the trajectory of his films, and there's some, you know, films that, you know, kind of are on the same level as others, but then you get to here and it's like, it's got every Wes Anderson ism in it, but done so creatively.
But it's also
in
stop motion and hilarious.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like, and I mean, all of the voice acting, which again, it's a lot of the Wes Anderson. Yeah. The
his true
cast. Yep. Really quick. Who is Christofferson? Who plays Christofferson? Is that another Anderson person? I couldn't remember. I didn't think it was
Eric Anderson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that his brother? If I remember correctly, was Anderson's brother.
I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know.
But yeah, I think like, I don't know. It's very easy to look at this movie and say, oh yeah, this has that symmetrical feel of every other Wes Anderson film, but it's, I don't know. It just
very
looks
charming.
It's charming. It just looks neat. The needle drops are like, I love the scene when he's like trying to rally the troops and he's like calling them by their genus or scientific names or something. And what's the music? Isn't it Beach Boys?
They do use Beach Boys quite a lot.
Yeah. And there's a Rolling Stones moment that I thought was pretty cool. It's, I don't know.
Whack bat. Nothing like a little good game of whack bat.
That's Yes. Seriously, this movie to me just flew by when I first saw it. Like, it was that good. I don't think I quite understood one part about the ending. Like, when he saw, I think when he saw the, I don't want to spoil wolf. Anything, but he sees that the wolf. I didn't quite get that. A very small complaint, though. Not even much of a complaint.
I love that part. Just the fist in the air. I love it. I love it so much.
That's you just explained it. Like, this is that's nothing to complain about. Mike, this is a great choice. I love this movie.
You're damn right.
So what's interesting about this is I'm not a huge Wes Anderson fan.
Here we go.
No, I'm not gonna talk shit about Wes Anderson. This isn't the podcast for that. I think Fantastic Mr. Fox is a fine film. If you're into Wes Anderson and stop motion animation and all that, it's perfectly fine. But when you look at his filmography, I think it has a very interesting place. Bottle Rocket and Rushmore are kind of its own thing. And then he kind of crescendoed early with Royal Tenenbaums. It was kind of like announced himself as the Wes Anderson we now know. Mm-hmm. And then you have The Life Aquatic and the Darjeeling Limited.
I love those. Yeah.
And I think that those were kind of not the same. I think they were a bit of a letdown for a lot of people who were expecting that Rushmore Royal Tenenbaums thing. And then he comes out with Mr. Fox and kind of just changes everything again. Does animation, does, you know, his little, you know, squee moments and all that. and then he kind of just from there is just like been on a steady incline, right? Moonrise Kingdom, Grand Budapest Hotel, Isle of Dogs, whatever, that kind of just fell by the wayside. But then French Dispatch, which just came out. And these were, I think he announced himself as like an auteur director at that point. And I think it's kind of started with Mr. Fox myself.
I think he came out as an auteur director. Yes. I don't know that he's ever been anything.
I will agree with that. Yes.
Well, no, but like you look at Bottle Rocket, especially, is a very different movie. But Rushmore
right away, like that was an indie darling.
Yeah, but that was indie, fine. I think he wasn't the Wes Anderson we know until Tenenbaums. And then I think he kind of went in and kind of went off a little bit and went astray with Steve Zissou and Darjeeling. And then kind of...
Disagree, great movies.
There might be fine movies, but I don't think that they were what he wanted. He wasn't the guy who was like always in the Oscar conversation until Fantastic Mr. Fox. That's all I'm saying.
All right.
And that's a compliment. What I mean, though, is this movie is like kind of like he's been... on a rocket ever since, just getting more and more popular. I mean, to the point where French Dispatch has been like, you know, everybody's been talking about this movie for a year nonstop. So, yeah.
So you're saying it was his way into America's heart?
I think it was. I think it was. I think by taking a Roald Dahl book, getting George Clooney as the lead and doing animation where you're allowed to be eccentric and weird and, you know, kind of hyper stylized and everybody just, it doesn't look weird. It just looks fitting. I think he was able to take what he does best and put it in a genre that I think arguably it fits better in. So, yeah.
It's like the perfect pivot for him. Like, you know, by that point he'd done, the prep school movie, the genius children movie. He did a, you know, underwater submarine, whatever film,
whatever that movie was,
train, you know, sibling bonding. And then he adopts a Roald Dahl book and stop motion animation. Like, perfect. Like, of course he's going to do something like that. This is like his peak. I mean, I'm not saying that in the sense that this is his best movie, just that at this point, it's like, okay, I'm completely on board with Wes Anderson. And then, well, I don't know. then there was the aftertime.
It's funny because I think a lot of Wes Anderson fans point to like one movie. You know, like this is my
movie. All a different movie.
Yeah, it really
very
is.
Very much.
I was talking to my wife about this too, because for me, it's Rushmore. I think Rushmore is a great movie.
That's so good. Rushmore.
I know when you guys interviewed Luke Wilson, I know Brian was all about Bottle Rocket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And very watchable.
Yeah. And I know that my very watchable. I know my wife was like, oh, I love Moonrise Kingdom. I'm like, what? Really? Okay,
I
cool.
I like that movie too.
And then there, you know, Grand Budapest won like four Oscars, you know, so a lot of people point to that, but it's really strange. I think it's great that
do you think there are any Isle of Dogs out there?
Oh yeah, I don't know.
I don't think there are.
I think that movie came out at a weird time.
Well, that is just a lot of people were going to compare it, or were expecting to compare it to Fantastic Mr. Fox,
and it wasn't.
It's not that kind of movie.
No. No, I think it was a misfire. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it was, I definitely don't think it was his strongest work, but
no,
I think, I think it was good that, well, I think the problem was he took 4 years for that movie to come out. Mm-hmm. And then people were expecting something more than what it was. And then I think it's good that it's been another three for French Dispatch, because I think the stink of Isle of Dogs has kind of worn off a bit.
That's true.
And I think people are super hyped. It's almost like this is his follow-up to the Grand Budapest. So, you know, good for him. And yeah. And like I was telling Mike before, he's already finished photography on his new untitled movie that was filming in Spain with Tom Hanks, Margot Robbie, and like a million other huge actors.
Are you talking about Asteroid City?
I don't know I don't know that a title has been officially announced.
That's the next one.
Wait, Hanks is in that?
With Hanks and that. Margot Robbie and Scarlett
Johansson. Yeah, yeah. I didn't know that the title was announced.
It was.
But cool. Yes, Asteroid City. And I'll then apparently reports going around that he's already getting ready to prep his next movie. So we won't have to wait 3 years for a new Wes Anderson. Probably won't even have to wait another 6 months. We'll see.
I bet Jason Schwartzman's in it.
Yeah. And Bill Murray. But or Tilda Swinton.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, God, we joke like, oh, he's only getting Jason Schwartzman, Bill Murray, and Tilda Swinton, Adrian Brody. I mean, these are like incredible actors. Good for him.
Yeah. I like that Jason Schwartzman. Like every few movies, he'll pull somebody else in who then sticks around for a few movies.
It's almost ridiculous though, right? Like he's going to have to start doing like French Dispatch, like anthology films, just to have parts for everybody.
Exactly.
Or
exactly.
He can do like an Avengers thing where he brings all the characters together.
Holy shit. No. I'm looking at the cast list for Asteroid City, and you have to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 to get to Scarlett Johansson. 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 to get to Liev Schreiber. Mm-hmm. 13 for Matt Dillon. I mean, like this
Fisher
is
Stevens, baby.
I know.
Oh my God.
Hackers own Fisher Stevens or Short Circuit, but we don't recognize that movie because he is a very problematic in that movie. But yeah, like the cast, like as you were saying, Brian, he keeps bringing in more people, but he doesn't get rid of old people.
Yeah.
So now he's just, I don't know where he gets the money, or these people are just doing it for scale. And, you know,
I think people do Wes Anderson just to do Wes Anderson.
Yeah. He brings out something in these people like Bill Murray. Just that was his second, you know, career resurgence was with,
yeah,
Rushmore. Was with Rushmore. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if you know how you see these actors and they'll do like these major movies and then go and do like four plays in a row. Yeah. I wonder if like Wes Anderson is so strange and eccentric that it almost feels like doing a stage show. To them, it's just like such a change of
that wouldn't surprise me.
Well, he creates, what I've heard is that he creates, it's like a summer camp environment.
Right, right.
So it's something that actors are very much into, and it's very conducive to just kind of their kind of thing. So
is Wes Anderson the auteur Marvel Studios? In the sense that he's
only
able
if he
to
does a crossover.
Well, no, but only if he's in the sense that he's able to just like create an environment that these people who are like the biggest names in Hollywood are just fighting each other to be part of. Like it's nuts.
Oh, yeah. I see what you mean.
Yeah. All that
what
to say
saying is Charles is wrong, and we'll talk about his pick.
Yeah. No, we are actually going to segue into my pick. I was going to go to Brian, but if you don't mind, Brian, I'm going to
No, please. I can't wait to talk about yours.
So I chose 1987's Chris Columbus teen comedy Adventures in Babysitting, starring none other than Elizabeth Shue. Mm-hmm. And here's my spiel for this. To me, this is part of a plethora of what I think are kind of what are like second tier 80s teen comedies. But that's not
How
a bad
dare
thing.
Dare you?
That's not a bad thing. I feel like when we talk top tier 80s teen comedies, we're talking John Hughes movies, right? And then you have, for lack of a better term, the John Hughes ripoffs. And I think Adventures in Babysitting definitely fits in there. But that
Absolutely.
Said,
totally.
it's, it's really great. And I think it's right up there with the Hughes films, but a lot of people just have slept on it over the years. So
for a long time, I assumed it was a John Hughes movie.
Right.
It's placed in Chicago.
Totally agreed. Yes.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to the similarities because they are there. But Adventures in Babysitting, for those that don't know, follows one night in the life of Chris Parker, a 17-year-old babysitter who's stood up by her boyfriend and forced to pick a night of babysitting for another family. However, shenanigans ensue as Chris is compelled to take the two young kids to Chicago in the middle of the night and go on a pretty nutso adventure, thus the title. The film, like I said, and we've hinted at, is heavily inspired by Hughes films, especially for me. It's got notes of Ferris Bueller's Day Off, but also a little bit Uncle Buck. And yeah. I think the main reason the film stood out for me as a kid was the Thor subplot, where there's this little girl obsessed with Marvel Comics Thor and finds a young Vincent D'Onofrio who looks exactly like Thor. And to
with the hammer to boot.
With the hammer. His entrance is fantastic with that wig, by the way.
Yes.
So I just remember as a comic book nerd itching for any sort of like representation on screen. Yes. Like, please, let's see some Avengers, goddammit. And then to see, like, even though it was fake Thor and it was Vincent D'Onofrio in a wig and, you know, whatever, it was just cool to see that.
Isn't that sad? Like, the mention of superheroes was the reason I watched it.
My wife, okay, so we watched this last night, and my wife had never seen this movie. And when the Thor thing came up, she just started giggling. And she was like, it's so hilarious that there was a time when people didn't know who Thor was. And if you don't remember, one caveat to this pick, by the way, is that they show the edited for TV version, which is a kind of a bummer because it takes out some of the language, but you know, whatever.
Don't fuck with the babysitter.
Yeah, what is it? Don't fool
the babysitter is what they say. That is,
it's just hilarious that there were like kids in 1987 who were like, Thor, how stupid are you for liking Thor? you know, and then Chris Hemsworth is like a A-list god right now. Anyway, that's why I chose the movie. But Brian, do you have any thoughts on Adventures in Babysitting?
First time I saw this was actually on a Betamax.
Of course it was.
Yes. Because
at least 50% of the audience doesn't even know what you just said.
No. What happened was we had gone to an estate sale, my family did, and got a beta machine and like a huge like case of tapes and what's this? Adventures in Babysitting. Well, this could be anything. And I put it in and it was turns out to be a movie and starring at the time
Bradley Whitford.
Yes, Contagious. And starring at the time, I only knew her from Back to the Future Part 2 and 3's Elizabeth Shue. And yeah, I think that one was, I just blazed through it. I just thought it was super fun. You're right. This is better than Ferris Bueller. This is better than Ferris Bueller.
I wouldn't go that far. I literally have a Ferris Bueller's Day Off poster like hanging in my office. I fucking love that movie. But
it's one of my favorite movies of all time.
But yeah, it is very Ferris Bueller. It's definitely that sort of vibe. But I don't know that it's there. This is like a B+ and Ferris is like an A.
This one has, I mean, just when you think like, okay, well, I see how this scene's going to play out. Now let's pivot back to like, there's a subplot with her friend who, this is how the movie kind of like kicks off, that she has to go and pick up her friend, Penelope Ann Miller from the bus station. Is that correct?
Yes.
And
very problematic scenes, by the way.
Oh my gosh, those scenes in the bus station are something
homeless
else.
People fighting over phone booths as their home.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and I just love the guy flashing the gun though. Yeah, just smiling huge.
And then like a homeless lady stealing her glasses. Oh my gosh. Anyway,
it's good.
Like, it's hilarious, but it's also, you watch it, you're like, it's very 1987.
Yes. And every movie I don't know that there's maybe a ton of them, but every movie that's tried to rip off this plot, like Mike, you had said The Sitter with Jonah Hill,
Jonah Hill,
is the biggest offender. There's no topping this. Even like the opening scene, I remember as a kid when she's dancing on the bed, getting ready for her big date, like just getting kind of like pumped up, like, wow, this seems like a really fun time. Look how much fun this girl is having right now.
You know what that scene does? is it makes every teenage boy fall in love with her.
Jesus mm-hmm. Christ. Yeah.
Like, I mean, there is, it's such a good scene in setting up how charming and likable she is that you're just along for the ride the whole movie.
Also, and, at no point do you believe that Bradley Whitford is in her league.
No. You think like maybe he's her dad.
No.
Yeah.
Because Bradley Whitford can't look 19.
By the way,
he's always been 45.
Did you know this? The car they used for his car, the Camaro, was his, and that so cool license plate was also his.
Stop.
That's what? Bradley Whitford had a so cool license plate.
I want to believe that, but I also think that's suspect. Because like that just screams like too convenient, because it's actually a plot point. Because remember, they make fun of the guy because they're driving to Chicago and you know, the kid's like, he's got the so cool license plate. Mm-hmm. Like, what a nerd. Like, mm-hmm. I don't see Bradley Whitford actually having that.
Hey, if it's on IMDb, it's real.
Yeah, right. Okay. But yeah, I want it to be real. I really do. Mm-hmm. It was also fun for me to point out every actor in this movie to my wife and be like, oh, this is so-and-so. I was like, Elizabeth Shue, you may remember her from The Boys. It was like creepy breast milk lady. And she was like, really? And then I'm like, Bradley Whitford, you know, the guy who would have voted for Obama for a third term if he had the chance. You know,
what else was the little girl in the girl who loved Thor? Has she been in anything else?
I don't know. I don't believe so.
Familiar outside of this.
She is the sleeper MVP of this whole movie, though.
Oh, she's awesome. She's so good.
Maya Bruton.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds familiar. Yeah.
She was apparently in Back to the Future in some form.
I love how Brian has just subconsciously cataloged everybody from Back to the Future that he doesn't even realize it.
Yeah.
He's like, wasn't she in something where like Back to the Future? He's like, ah, yes.
Yes.
But Anthony Rapp is a good actor. And
he has the best laugh. When the car gets the flat tire and he's just laughing, like I just start laughing immediately. He's so good.
Those kids are great. I love that. So when I'm watching it, I'm like, man, this is really like over. It's like hyperbolic in it, the way they treat like the city, right? Like not mm-hmm. even 1987 Chicago was that bad, right? But I if you look at it as kind of like through the POV of 14-year-olds and 15-year-olds, like, yeah, Chicago at midnight is pretty scary. Yeah. And when you watch that it, with that idea, it kind of all works. And Anthony Rapp really sells that as the sex-crazed, like, 14-year-old who just wants a damn Playboy, guys. It's all he wants is a damn Playboy.
I have to say, too, that, you know, I know it's... It leads into the scene I just mentioned where the tire goes flat and Anthony Rapp is laughing and everything. But when Elizabeth Shue is telling that story about what was the story?
The claw guy the guy with the hook hand that rips the faces off kids.
It's not like we've heard this story before. Like it's not like the scariest thing, but for some reason it sets up the scenes following pretty well. Cause then they encounter that the tow truck guy with the hook and like
handsome John Pruitt. Yeah.
Yes. Every little character in this movie is just, it doesn't matter who the actor is. They play that role to a T, like give it 100%.
Yeah, I agree. I think the standouts are definitely Elizabeth Shue. She ignited the hearts of millions of teenagers in the 80s and 90s. Because of this movie. Mm-hmm. I think Anthony Rapp is great in this movie. I think the little girl, Maya Bruton's great. Penelope Ann Miller really sells the hell out of being a really scared, frightened teenager in a bus station. Absolutely. Bradley Whitford.
Is it sad that I only just realized Penelope Ann Miller is the same person from Relic?
Oh, yes. Yes.
I only just realized that.
What does she say? Like, I think he's going to kill someone. Maybe me.
Because he's flashing a gun.
Yeah.
Really happily, though.
Yeah. Very yeah. Happily. Oh, I wonder, because they obviously can't show like a flasher, but I wonder if that was kind of like Chris Columbus's tongue-in-cheek wink at the camera flasher idea. Because he's literally got a trench coat and he's opening it up going, with a gun.
Fantastic.
Like, it's really funny.
He does have the glee of a flasher for sure.
Yeah, yes, he does.
It was almost like it was in the script as a flasher, and then on set they're like, "We can't show dong. Like, we can't do this. Does anybody have a gun?" Like, yeah. Sorry, it's probably too soon for that.
Yeah. Oh. Is it loaded?
Oh boy. All right. Ooh. And Bradley Whitford, we mentioned he is like the perfect 80s villain asshole guy, right? Like,
yes,
he's made for it. He's so good. So good.
Agreed.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Wonderful pick.
Great movie. I wish it wasn't the censored made for TV version. But you know, it's still incredibly likable and fun. Avoid at all costs the 2016 remake.
Is that when that came out? 2016? Yes. Jesus.
We were on Disney Plus and we were watching it, and it does recommend that you immediately start watching the remake after. And my wife was like, well, let's do it. We got to at least give it a shot. And I was like, all right, cool. And no, 10 minutes in, we turned it off. It was terrible. It's just, it's such a 2000s Disney Channel movie that it, you know, has got the like little teenage girl star of the moment, like the Ariana Grande type. And it has like very little to do with the actual original movie. And it's just stupid. Like cell phones are used all the time. I don't know. Just silly. Not worth the
cell phones, lame.
Well, obviously in 1987, if any of these people had a cell phone, problem solved right away, there would be no adventures.
Yes.
But yeah, so anyway, Adventures in Babysitting, seek it out. It's fantastic. With that out of the way, I want to go to Brian, because Brian's pick, I think, might be the best choice overall. And something that I know Brian has been itching to talk about for more than a year now on this podcast. So Brian, tell the world what you think is the best under the radar Disney Plus find.
Well, you know, Mike already said it. It is the 2015 Fantastic Four remake.
It's a can't miss.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I
you know, that will... movie, like the director doesn't even want you to watch it.
I don't know. There's still potential in that film.
We're not relitigating Fantastic.
No, I know.
Release the Trank cut.
Gosh. Trank doesn't even want the Trank cut.
No, my choice is the 1991 incredible The Rocketeer. I've often considered this to be my second favorite movie, but there are times where I honestly have to question that and wonder why it's not number
this
one.
This doesn't beat Ghostbusters.
It's I don't know. There's times where I watch this movie and it's, I think, more so than Ghostbusters, because I honestly did see Ghostbusters when I was really young. I was at just the right age that I can even now snap back to seeing that in the theater. There's so many things about this movie. And for those who haven't seen The Rocketeer, about this test pilot, Cliff Secord, played by Billy Campbell.
What a great name.
It is a great name. Who in 1938 era Los Angeles is working as a test pilot, comes into possession somewhat mysteriously of this rocket pack that you can strap to your back. It'll make you fly. Wonders where he got it, realizes he can probably make some money using it, but doesn't realize there are other groups that want this, including the inventor of the pack, who turns out to be Howard Hughes, played by Terry O'Quinn, pre-Lost, and a kind of Errol Flynn sort of actor, a big Hollywood type, Neville Sinclair, played by James Bond, Timothy Dalton.
Everybody's favorite Bond.
Right. And so there's a lot of, you know, some mystery elements. Why does he want the rocket? You know, what's going to happen here? I don't know. It's basically, some people have called it like kind of an Indiana Jones-esque film. Some people even called it like one of the first like Disney ventures into the superhero genre. Certainly like a grandfather to Marvel. It's cool that the director of the film, Joe Johnston, would eventually helm the first Captain America film 20 years later.
I mean, you could argue that without this, he wouldn't have gotten first.
Absolutely. Yes.
I mean, this is very clearly the like DNA. They're like, yes, we need to make The Rocketeer, but with Captain America, let's hire the guy who did Rocketeer.
Definitely. it's very cool to see Captain America, the first Avenger, and see that like this really is like a kind of a cleaner, more beefed up Rocketeer, but I still love the Rocketeer. It has like a Disney look to it of that era, like the live action films kind of had a look to them, but still it also has like, I feel like I'm looking through a window into the 30s. And here again, just like all these other picks here, there's not a bad person on this cast. And it's so Billy Campbell, we've got Jennifer Connelly as his actress girlfriend, who
is great, well. By the way, this is so good. Really, yes. Prime era Jennifer Connelly,
very much. And this was after Labyrinth, correct?
Yes.
After Labyrinth.
Labyrinth was like 88, 89, right? Earlier.
Yeah.
Alan Arkin, dude.
Alan Arkin is his assistant or mechanic, Peavy. He's great. And I would say another cast member just as important would be, I'm a score guy. The music by James Horner is, without what he did on this movie, I don't know. I'm sure another, great composer of that era could have done a fine job, but for some reason what James Horner brought to this film, and I'm going to tell you guys, I am getting a little emotional because that music really is very special to me. The theme,
it was your first Cloud Atlas sextet, wasn't it?
Actually, yes. I'm going to say yes. James Horner, for those of you who don't know, he's done so many movies, like especially the three of us have grown up with Land Before Time, Field of Dreams, Apollo 13. But
talk about movies that make you emotional. Land Before Time.
For real.
Oh my God.
Yes. Back
to me as a kid.
The themes he created here, I would say, like the theme for The Rocketeer, which is kind of opens and closes the film, but then you hear like a more amped up version when, he's flying around and saving the day. I would say is better than, what do you guys think? 95% of the Marvel Cinematic Universe scores out there.
Yeah. Well, it's more distinct. I'll give it that.
Yes.
Early Marvel was like pre-Avengers up to Avengers was great. But then they just kind of sound more samey.
Very much.
Anyway, neither here nor there.
Yeah. No, it's really too bad because this is one movie that I'm just so desperately wanting to show my kids. But 3 minutes into the movie, you have this gunfight, which is a major part of the plot, where someone gets killed, and then like later in the movie people are getting like broken in half by one of the bad guys' henchmen trying to find the rocket, and there's other people who get murdered at various points. So this is a good example. Didn't we talk recently about the older, like what PG meant when we were kids.
Yeah.
I don't know what this would be rated now, but anyways, this movie is simply incredible. And every time I see it, I just never want it to end. It always feels like it ends a little too quickly. That's how great it is. And I don't know. I could keep going about this.
I'm as you're talking, I'm paying attention to you, Brian, I swear, but I'm also looking at James Horner scores. Holy crap. This guy, Wrath of Khan, Cocoon, Commando, Aliens, American Tail, Batteries Not Included, Willow, Red Heat, Land Before Time, Field of Dreams, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. And that was in a 4-year period.
Yeah. Yeah.
Up to Glory in 1989. And then he just kept going. The 90s are just as stacked. Deep Impact, Bicentennial Man, Perfect Storm.
Big loss. The late great James Horner, big loss.
Oh my gosh. Unbelievable. Anyway, I agree. Yeah. I think as Mike was talking about this, we were so desperate for anything superheroes in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
That when The Rocketeer came out, you couldn't help but love this. It was like the coolest superhero comic book that you never read. Right. Like it was just so cool to see a guy flying around, and he had such a cool helmet, and he shot guns. It was
He punched Nazis.
He was Captain America. Like he really was Captain America. And it was so cool. And I have fond memories of that again, because as a kid, desperate to see superheroes in any form, it was just really neat to see a live action one, even though I wasn't invested in the characters like I would have been in, I even liked the 91 Captain America movie. I think it was 91 or 90 at that time.
Wait, what?
You don't remember that?
Oh, at that time?
Yeah. I'm not doing it now. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But I was just like that desperate for stuff. But Rocketeer was like next level, obviously. This is way better. But yeah, such a good nostalgic pick. I love it.
Thank you. Yep.
It is a fantastic film.
That's all I got, Mike.
That's all I got. It's literally, what else can you say about The Rocketeer that he hasn't said besides it's just fantastic and you can watch it?
Can we argue it's the best thing that Billy Campbell ever did?
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know. His role on The OC was pretty decent.
What a fine show that was.
this is Billy Campbell's best. And it was cool to see that he came back to do the animated Rocketeer show, even though that's not what I was hoping for.
It was for toddlers. Yeah.
It was for toddlers.
What do you think of the remake that is being developed?
The sound
right
of
now?
It.
Well,
not a remake, more of a sequel. Yeah. Is it going to be like the '50s?
I mean, whatever it is, I'm all for Oyelowo throwing on the backpack.
Yeah.
The backpack.
I think it's going to be great.
They just got to get the right person doing the music. Maybe it'll be that dude who finished did the conducting for Magnificent Seven after he passed away. Because I think Horner wrote the score for that before he died. And then his assistant, I think, just finished it for him or something. I don't know. But or get Silvestri, you know, get someone else from that era that could capture that same vibe. But I don't know. That's my
ready for thought. Me to disappoint you, Brian.
Oh, no.
Remember who our first interview on this podcast was with?
That was...
Max Winkler.
Was that our first one?
The first one. Do you know what he was hired to do in July 2016?
He was hired to do a Rocketeer film?
A reboot called The Rocketeers. And he wrote a script.
Is that what... there was going to be a girl in that? Is that right?
I don't remember exactly. A black female pilot.
That's right. Yes.
So we talked to a guy that you could have talked about Rocketeers for 30 minutes with, and we didn't mention once.
No.
He could have given you all the details on an unmade Rocketeers movie.
No. Color.
What are you trying to do to this man?
I know. I just was looking through Wiki and I was like, oh my God, Max Winkler, friend of the show.
Well, shit. In the words of the Rocketeer. Well, classic catchphrase.
And that's another thing too. You mentioned the Indiana Jones link. I think it's really cool because I was a fan of Indiana Jones, still am a fan of Indiana Jones, maybe not 83-year-old Harrison Ford Indiana Jones, but we'll get there. Hopefully. But I really think that this takes the good parts of Indiana Jones, the kind of like the aw shit kind of like hero that kind of messes up, isn't as great as he thinks he is sort of thing, and just throws a superhero coat of paint on it, which is great.
Yeah. You know, I know Mike has said, like, with Man of Steel, like that's Superman on day
one. How dare you? I was in a good mood.
We'll circle back here shortly. But Mike like said, like, this is Superman trying to figure things out. Like, he doesn't know what he's doing. With The Rocketeer, it's kind of the same way. Like, all throughout the movie, like you said before, like, you know, we could be this guy. This is just a normal dude who just found this rocket and was trying to figure out how it worked throughout the entire movie. I mean, there's even one scene where they have to repair like a rip in the seam of the rocket with some chewing gum. So like, yeah, and
it's a huge plot point.
Yeah, yes, it is.
It really is. It's just cool to see, like, this is could be us.
I guess you could say it is the Man of Steel of its day.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I hate you, Mike D'Angelo. Why'd you have to take something I liked and ruin it with such comparisons?
Look at the poster for The Rocketeer and then look at the Man of Steel poster. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
By the way, great posters for The Rocketeer.
Yes.
So good. And just that design, by the way, in the 80s and 90s, because this arguably came at the time, this was in the post Batman 1989 era, right? Where big studios are like, oh shit, superheroes will work, right? And there were things like The Phantom. Do you remember that? The Shadow with Alec Baldwin, and then The Rocketeer, like all these like weird obscure heroes because Marvel just didn't have their shit together. Although they didn't, they're like fighting bankruptcy and, you know, making that Fantastic Four movie and the Captain America movie and
One of these days we'll have to talk about the unreleased Fantastic Four movie, because that
yes oh I would love to do that I would
yeah, yeah.
like genuinely
I would too okay
really quick that.
You're my what yeah
can you guys I had a Rocketeer poster on my wall all throughout high school. Can you guess which poster was next to it? Yes, there is a Disney connection. Can you guess which poster I had next to that one?
D3 the Mighty Ducks.
Are you did wait you a get, minute
was that it for real?
Yes.
That's hilarious.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious.
I was joking.
Not even the good Mighty Ducks.
No.
Like, I would rank that D2 was pretty good.
Wow. Mike D'Angelo. Yes.
What was it? Was D3?
I know you so well, my jokes are correct.
What was the subtitle or the subhead for that? It was D3 colon what?
I think it was just the Mighty Ducks.
D3, yeah. The Mighty Ducks.
Oh, they didn't have like Mighty Ducks Return special. Or something?
No, D2, the Mighty Ducks. D3, the Mighty Ducks.
Oh, lame.
The poster wasn't great. It was just like the Mighty Ducks like mask. And then I think Emilio Estevez was standing there staring at you. So every night he stared at me as I slept.
Not to get too much on a tangent here, because I think you can get the Mighty Ducks films on Disney Plus. But yes, what a weird thing that T2 comes out and then like they're like D2, the Mighty Ducks. It's like, what? You can't just like rip off
don't you speak ill of D2 the Mighty Ducks. That is a fantastic film.
It is. I just think it's hilarious that of all the movies to rip off that titling, it's like a Disney hockey kids movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To be fair, D3 did have the Mall of America scene, did it not?
Did it?
I believe that was the Mall of America scene.
Wait.
Is that when Fulton and Charlie were talking about their future? They were skating around together?
Yeah.
I think you're right.
Boy. Oh, boy. Are either of you guys watching the Disney Plus original series, Mighty Ducks Game Changers, I think it's
called? I did not finish the first season.
Was it decent? Is it like Cobra Kai or no?
There's some moments. Some of the cast members from the films do come back.
Does Pacey return?
That episode was enjoyable. The one where the most of the cast came back. Yes. Joshua Jackson does not.
Oh, poor guy.
Apparently they were setting him up like that he might come back in season two, but now Emilio Estevez is gone. So
yeah, contract disputes.
Yes.
Kids movies or kids shows are not even immune to contract disputes.
You know, I once got like, did you guys do like the troll book orders back in elementary school?
Of course.
I remember getting one, and in there it had the novelization for D2, but it wasn't called D2. It was labeled The Mighty Ducks Part Do, like Hot Shots Part Do. I remember thinking, oh, that's very odd. Like, what? That's really very similar to this other not great movie that just came out.
What was the Disney marketing team smoking that they're like just trying everything with the Mighty Ducks sequel? Just call it number two. Why was it like, okay, it's either D2 or Part Do? Like, what? Why are we doing this?
You're right, though. Why didn't they use a different subtitle for the third movie? That's actually very strange.
Because they didn't fucking need to.
No, they didn't. Oh, boy. Anyway, we'll do a whole Mighty Ducks episode eventually, because there's a things lot to look to forward to.
I can't believe I guessed randomly and got the poster that was on your wall.
That's great. I think I got it from Pizza Hut.
That's scary. Wow. That's scary. I was talking with my wife about this, actually. Pizza Hut. Do you guys remember when they'd give like movies, like VHSs for when you would
I had the Turtles
movies?
One.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I had, speaking again of Disney Plus, because they have everything, the X-Men animated series. Yep. I got on VHS, like the first three episodes from
you guys Pizza both Hut. Got that? I never got that.
Oh yeah. So good.
Was that what the
I wore those tapes out? What
did
was
they have
what?
A cool
and now you can watch it on Disney Plus. Oh,
I know.
Good.
It all comes back. Good
well, pivot. That actually is a good pivot, because I wanted to talk about some honorable mentions. For me, I was thinking there were a lot of movies. I think we talked offline about this, that I was going through the list. You can literally it's not like Netflix where they have like 40,000 movies. they have a list that you can go through A to Z, and it's not going to take you all day. And I saw like Willow is on there. Really good movie.
Yeah, great movie.
The Mighty Ducks
2015's The Fantastic Four.
Yes.
All the Fantastic Fours. Even Fant Four Stick. But also the animated series. Like if you're a comic book fan, the original Spider-Man series, the original well, not the original Spider-Man, but the 90s Spider-Man series, the 90s X-Men series, you can watch in all their glory. And that's awesome. And then you can catch up
reason. I was just going to say, but for whatever reason, my kids really got hooked on the 90s Hulk series.
Yeah.
So I've seen really? That like 15 times now. But
nice.
I remember loving the Silver Surfer series.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the CG that they would have to do kind of the trippy space scenes. Yes. So good. They have like the 90s Avengers TV series, cartoon series, yep. when they tried to make the Avengers like ultra cool. So they all had like weird padding and shit. Yeah, good stuff, man.
Alvin and the Chipmunks Shipwrecked.
Okay, so Mike joked that he was going to choose that movie. I kind of think you actually
I was choosing
it.
The Squeakquel, actually. That's what I was choosing.
Oh, do you actually
Was there another
enjoy
one after that? Was there another one after that?
Shipwrecked.
Shipwrecked.
There's yeah. There's been four of them, I believe.
Is Mallrats guy in all of them?
I don't know. I don't think I've seen any of them in their entirety.
Really? You have kids, though.
Yeah, I've for some reason they haven't hooked onto those, so wow. maybe later.
Okay. Yeah. And Brian, your kids don't care about Alvin and the Chipmunks?
No, I think I tried to show them the '80s the you know watch out because here we come that one that version and they just they checked out. I don't think they're super down for any of the old school. I hate saying old school. That's our childhood, but. Any of that anime.
How are they your kids, man?
But then they'll watch like a Goofy short from the early 40s. So
only if it's racist, though. It's really weird. I haven't excellent. Really talked to your kids, but I love them. Your daughter makes great cookies.
Yeah, she does.
Well, she sells me good cookies. She's that cute. Sounds terrible. She's a Girl Scout. Yeah, she's a Girl Scout, guys. Okay. I think with that said, it's time to put a bow on this episode and let's let's end it. Don't you agree?
Mm-hmm. Fine.
Mike, yes.
I mean, you didn't talk about Doug's first movie, but that's fine.
Wait a minute, is Doug's on there?
Doug's not on there.
I thought he was on Paramount. Is he not?
Well, here's the thing. Doug was for a little while part of the Disney family and then he went back. He's had multiple ownerships. The World of Doug is one we could spend an entire podcast on, my friends.
We're not. I can promise people we are never going to have a Doug podcast.
Oh no.
Unless Marvel reboots Doug as the next Avengers.
Marvel's Doug.
We're oh my god, that sounds Doug. Great. Marvel's Doug. Oh yeah. Man,
starring Chris Pratt.
yes.
In a Doug sense. Suit, like a full body Doug suit. So it doesn't conflict with Star-Lord. Okay. Everybody, if you've been listening this long, thank you for paying attention. And just as a general overview of what we've got coming up, because the holidays are approaching, we're going to have quite a few fun episodes coming, including a special pitch episode, which I won't give the subject about, but I think it's coming up soon. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to also do at least one or two year-end list episodes, possibly a redo of the most disappointing films like we did last year. And of course, we're going to have some holiday-inspired episodes as well. So stick around over the next 6 weeks-ish. Can you believe it's only 6 weeks till we're done with this year? Oh, but yeah, we'll have some great stuff coming up. So make sure you stick around. And, you know, if you like Mike D'Angelo's witty humor, check out him and Rodrigo nerding out over cowboy shit over on Yellowstoners.
You're damn right. It is a delightful.
Do you guys say show. Y'all and yeehaw?
I said giddy up at some point in the podcast.
I think I did listen to a little bit. You did say rootin' tootin'.
I did.
I don't know why.
Why not? It was why.
If you don't have a country accent by the next, well, I say by episode.
Well, they
three
don't
or
really
four,
have country accents.
I don't
you
care.
Need to watch
I don't
the
care.
Show.
I don't care. It's about cowboys. They all have country accents.
They're not. This is why you need to watch the show.
This is wonderful.
Disrespectful.
Between you and Rodrigo telling me it's like Godfather and Succession, which I do it not is. Believe.
It is.
It's about cowboys.
Yeah, but with cowboys.
Okay. Whatever.
don't insult Mr. Waterworld, okay?
He's Mr. Waterworld.
We did talk about Kevin Costner movies on this. What was that? Let Him Go or something? That was a good
Let Me Go, yeah.
Let Me Go?
Isn't it Let Me Go?
That was like Let Him Go or...
Hold on.
It really doesn't matter. Nobody's listening anymore. They've
let shit.
Let shit. That's a terrible name for a movie.
No, I just got a Haley Steinfeld song instead.
What?
Apparently she's got
what
a song
Googling?
Called Let Me Go. That's what
Don't,
it was.
Just Google Kevin Costner. Why are we recording right now? I'm leaving all of this in the edit.
It
by
is
the way.
It's called right. Let Him Go. You're right.
Exactly. Here. Thank you. Let Me Go. Jeez.
Let It Go.
Oh boy. All right. Anyway, keep listening if you listen to this stuff, because we're gonna have some other things that are just as weird. So stick around. Thanks.